Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Well, Neil Diamond once had an album called Hot August Night, and believe me, folks, it is a hot August night in Georgia, and this is the Kudzu Vine, and Catherine's here with us. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine.
And sitting in for David tonight, an old friend has come back to visit us to talk a little Georgia politics with us in the first segment of our show, Mr. Steve Anthony. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be with you again.
Okay, and before we go any further, Catherine, I believe you have something to tell us about a free screening.
Yes, I'm pleased to invite everyone to attend a free screening of the film Countdown to Zero, which is a movie about the global nuclear threat and about the dangers associated with terrorists getting their hands on nuclear weapons, as well as just random nuclear explosions that could happen. It premiered in January at the Sundance Film Festival, and it's been getting a lot of attention. And there's a free screening sponsored by Georgia Wand, Women's Action for New Directions, at the Midtown Theaters on Thursday night. And if you want more information, you can go to georgiawand.org, gawand.org, and follow the instructions. You just have to email Nicole at George Wan, and she will put your name on the list, and you can get some free tickets. And there'll be a short discussion following the movie, and there'll even be a free drink for those people who attend. So I hope you'll join us on Thursday evening.
All right. Thank you for that, Catherine. And now let me turn to you, Steve. Since we have last talked, I do believe you have become an author. A new book on the market, and it's about another old friend of ours. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, sometime in the decade, I hate to admit how long I worked on it, I wanted to write an account of a speaker, which was late 1973 through 2002. And for the vast majority of that time, I was to be his chief of staff. And then I was at the party for 3.5 years and closely with him. And then I actually did his campaign in 2000 when he had a significant Republican opponent and he won. And so I wanted to put down for posterity what it was like during that period. I was extremely lucky to be there, so I saw everything. It also coincided with the explosive growth of Georgia's history. He and Zell Miller were the constants through those couple of three decades. Zell first as lieutenant governor and then as governor, of course. And I just wanted to put down a record, so I wrote a book, and it's called Witness to History, which really can refer to me watching everything and watching Mr. Murphy and his role in this ascent of Georgia. But it also could be, you know, referring to him and the fact that his role in all of that and all the things that were done during that period that he and the various governors and lieutenant governors accomplished. And so I finally got it to press earlier this year. It's by McGraw-Hill, and it's not only available on Amazon website and Barnes & Noble, but it's going to be available at the Tech and the University of Georgia and the West Georgia and the Georgia State bookstores. And we're actually now in a big campaign developing the Murphy Library on the West Georgia campus, which will not only house all his papers, but will also include an exact replica of his famous office at the Capitol with all his personal memorabilia that was there, that's been held and graciously supplied by the family. And then this book will be part of that also as part of an official record. So it was a lot of fun. It was a neat experience. I just hope a lot of people can read it, if for no other reason than to have some knowledge and accounting of what went on back then. It's not a tell-all book, but I do tell a lot of things that went on behind the scenes that may or may not have been reported correctly in the press during that time.
And I wanted to ask you about that, Steve. You mentioned before we went on the air to Catherine and I that you wanted to put down an accurate record of what went on. Do you find when you talk to a lot of people around the state that there's a lot of inaccurate information about the speaker and his tenure
out there? Well, yeah, in a way, and I'll tell you, it's kind of at this point in time in 2010, and the fact he's been out of office 8 years and passed away 2 years ago, people that were around and knew him will know to a degree what went on versus what was reported to have gone on. And some people then may only have as their point of reference the newspapers. But more, you know, if you stop and think about it, that group of people demographically are going to become a smaller and smaller percentage. So 10, 20, 30 years from now, people are going that are having interest in politics and this kind of thing are going to want to look to something about this time period and about this man who served as speaker longer than anybody else at the state level in the country. And if there wasn't a book, they would have nothing but the newspapers to go to. And for a long period of time, the newspapers were, you know, were anti-incumbency, anti-Democrat, although they were, at least Atlanta papers, were accused of being to the left. Now, they changed in the last 6 or 8 years of his time in office, but and then there was one book written earlier, kind of a biography of him, which was his whole life, but it was just kind of a rehash of the stuff that you would have gotten out of the newspapers.
And by the way, when I get my copy of that book in a few weeks, I'm going to get mine at the Tech bookstore. I do hope I can score myself an autograph for that book.
Absolutely. I'll be glad. I'll be glad to do it. They should have them in there. School starts here in Georgia. The university system, public schools start, the university system starts near the end of August. So probably by September, the bookstores will have them, but I'd be more than honored to sign your copy.
You know, it would be really interesting to do like a book signing with you and give you a chance to, you know, get a group of people together and like at Manuel's.
That's exactly what we're going to do. The publisher's already agreed to do that, and we're shooting for sometime like in September, late September.
Oh, great. Well, be sure to let us know about it so
we can tell
everybody about it on the Kudzu Vine, and also so that those of us who can make it can attend, because I'd love to go to those things, and I would love to hear. It's always interesting to hear the author talk about the book and the process of writing it, as well as the topic. So that's great. I'll look forward to that.
Thanks.
Okay. Here I was, by the way, guys, moving into Georgia politics, thinking I was ready to early vote. Then I hear, No early voting yet, because we have ourselves a recount, apparently requested by the Coleman campaign in a race that Darrell Hicks won by 622 votes. Steve, have you heard what the latest is?
I think the law refers to the percentages, and there has to be less than 1% difference between the top and the second vote getter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those percentages qualify. So I think they're going to have to grant a recount. My question was why it took so long and then, you know, where they're at. But that won't really have an impact on the runoff that we're talking about because it was just the two of them.
Uh-huh.
This is not a good scenario, but it won't have an impact. You should be able to go ahead and early vote. What would happen is if they got this thing resolved, they wouldn't be able to hold a new election on it until at the same time as the runoff. They'd have to hold a special election, or they would just recount the votes and declare either Hicks, in fact, the winner, or they would declare Coleman picked up enough votes to win. And I think if that happened, you'd see Hicks file a motion in Superior Court. So it shouldn't have an impact on the runoff election, but I certainly am not Brian Kemp and, following the way he runs the Secretary
and
of State's office.
I really wouldn't want you to be. I might. but, Catherine, 622 votes. Is there really any realistic way that a recount is going to change a statewide election with that?
Well, my question with the way we vote now is that if those vote counts change with electronic voting, then we have a lot more to worry about than that one.
Well, you're exactly right. You're saying that the system's wrong, but here's what will happen. Don't forget, a lot of people don't vote on the machine on election day. They do the old traditional absentee ballot where they've got a paper that they mail in. Those will be where the discrepancies exist, if any exist at all. It won't be on the machines on the
computer. Okay, well, that's because, there really should never, with electronic, well, but you have a good point. It would have to
right.
be in the absentee ballots or
right.
the provisional,
right.
if there's any provisional ballots.
And provisional ballots, exactly, right.
But,
okay.
I always think, okay, with the electronic machines.
Okay.
That's the least
now,
of our problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, now, Steve, you mentioned the coming runoff 9 days
mm-hmm.
from now. And the first race I guess we have to look at is this runoff between Handel and Deal. On their TV ads, even the most casual observer will have to admit that they are literally hacking each other to pieces. Now we hear that Mama Grizzly is going to come in and campaign for Handel on the day before the vote. We also see that a lot of in-state office holders and people with skin in the game like Newt Gingrich have weighed in on the side of Nathan Deal. And a Rasmussen poll has come out that shows that Deal would actually run better against Governor Barnes than Karen Handel.
Oh,
my question to both of you, beginning with you, Steve, is what do you think is going to happen in this runoff?
Well, it's this sounds trite, but it's going to be purely a function of turnout. I was on NPR last week, and they were asking why the abortion issue, why was it raised, what's the effect of it, and the fact is both camps are trying to motivate their people to come out and vote. So that's why Handel's using Palin. Deal has picked her flip-flopping on abortion. In a runoff, you've got to motivate the voter to come out, and then, of course, when they come out, you know, have them vote for you. The turnout in the primary almost 2 weeks ago was embarrassingly low, and
mm-hmm.
and yet the turnout in the runoff is going to be even worse. And it's going to be literally and figuratively a handful of people that are going to decide this thing. So they are trying their best to motivate as many hardcore Republican voters as they can to come out and vote for one or the other. And right now, I think it's a toss-up, but I have said all along that I thought Deal was their strongest candidate, and I said that from day one. And I also thought that Eric Johnson was going to be formidable, and he came on strong at the end. Handel kind of snuck up on us, and I think you do have to attribute that to Palin somewhat within the Republican voter camp. I think it's going to hurt him in the fall if she's the nominee. And then I always had felt that Auction Down would crash and burn before it was all over.
Okay, now, Catherine, you live right in the middle of the 5th Congressional District there, and Karen Handel's base would be the North Metro area. Are those people going to come out and vote?
I don't know. A lot of people go on vacation in August. I think Steve's absolutely right. It's really going to be about turnout, and, you know, I think a lot is going to depend on how much juice Sarah Palin contributes to the mix. But I think it's going to be a dismal turnout, and you know, it's really going to be about who gets their people out. I'm really torn. You know, I understand that people think that Nathan Deal is a strong candidate, but I think that as a Democrat, I'd rather run against Karen Handel. I mean, I'd rather run against Nathan Deal. I think I think Karen Handel would be. I think she has managed to convey the image of being somewhat of a moderate, even though I don't believe she is. But I think she's managed to convey that image. So I think there's some, moderate Republicans and independents and more conservative Democrats who might vote for her, whereas if it was Deal, I think we might get some of those people to vote for Roy. But, you know, there might not be a big difference. I just think it's hard for men to run against women. I think it just makes it more difficult.
The only thing I would mention there is that the state's history comes into play. Georgia has never elected a female governor. They have never elected a female U.S. senator, and they've only elected two congresswomen from the same district.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say Georgia does not have a history of electing, you know, female candidates to the top positions. I don't know if that'll play into that this year or not.
I don't think it will for this reason. You know, we're going to have 9.5 million people probably after the census numbers come out.
Uh-huh.
That is roughly 6 million more than we had 30 years ago. And there was a point in our history, in our lifetime, where you could say we never elected a black to a statewide office.
Right.
It can happen. It absolutely can happen. What my fear is this. You know, the Republicans were the first ones to elect a female statewide. It wasn't the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're the party that elects the first female governor, then that's another blow against the Democratic Party and what it stands for. I think it absolutely can happen. I think really history isn't a barometer anymore in this state because we've changed so much so quick. And the voter here, you know, the Georgia voter or even the Southern voter, someone that's a native of Georgia or of the South, is in a minority.
Uh-huh.
And the majority of the voters are from mostly the Northeast and the Midwest and a little bit from the Southwest, and they almost all, obviously, brought with them Republican voting patterns. And sometimes that's moderate, and sometimes it's arch-conservative. And they don't even know the history of Georgia, so they're not bound by any of that.
Well, they
only
read your book.
Now, even with this conservative wave, just this very morning, one of the most popular of the political websites, Real Clear Politics, updated their election outlook, and they moved the Georgia governor's race from lean Republican into the toss-up category.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it'll stay there. Cook Report is excellent. They are really good, and I think you'll see them do that rating also by the file once they see who the Republican nominee is.
So and, the question is, is Governor Barnes surging, or is all this negative campaigning during the runoff on the Republican side dragging them down, Steve? Which is,
well, I think it's the latter. Now, here's what will happen. You will see that new ranking come out, but then they'll come out with another one in mid to late October, and that's the one that really counts. I mean, it's not election day, but it'll be more accurate because what that will do will measure the fall campaign and how much the Republicans, no matter who their nominee is, because it'll be the Republican Party behind them, and probably to some extent the RNC behind them. They will be hammering Roy Barnes on his first term in office record day after day after day, and they'll be assessing that six-week period in their last ranking before the election. So I think absolutely it'll go into the toss-up right now. It might even go lean Democrat. But then it'll come. They'll have another one late, mid to late October, which will factor in the actual fall race matchup, and we'll see what that looks like, plus any polling numbers that will be coming out.
And with that, believe it or not, the first section of this program has flown by us, the section we were going to talk about Georgia. Steve, I know you've got to leave us now as we move into the Tennessee section of the show. We certainly appreciate you being with us, and please come back during the fall campaign and talk to us again about some of these races.
I'll be glad to, and remember, we do have a Democratic runoff at the state level and a couple of local ones around the state in a week and a half also, so there's a reason for Democrats to go out and vote also, but I enjoyed it. Good talking with both of you and the listeners, and everybody try to stay cool. It started raining here in Atlanta.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Steve.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Steve. Y'all take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And with us now, we're going to move into the Tennessee section of our program. We have with us Mr. Chris Smith. Good evening, sir.
Good evening to you guys. How are you doing today?
Well, we're doing very well. This is Tim Shiflett. Chris, I know you've never been on with us before, and what we like to do with first-time callers is ask them if they would just give a brief biography of themselves and tell us a little bit about themselves. So if you'd please do that for us, sir.
Oh, well, great, Tim. I appreciate it. My name is Christopher Smith, and I work for Little Smith Strategies Consulting Firm. It's a consulting firm I started about 2 years ago, and basically some of the races that we worked on are the Travis Childers race in Mississippi 1, the special election. We worked for Harold Ford Jr. in Tennessee, Governor Bredesen's race. We've also done some races in Illinois and Chicago. Basically, we've been located in the southeastern region. But right now, we're working on some races in South Carolina and Florida. So that's the basic background for me. And what else can we get into?
Okay, well, let's just get right into what's going on in the great state of Tennessee, because we got a primary coming up. And the first question I've got to come out of the chute with, why in the world does Tennessee hold its primary on a Thursday and not Tuesday?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I know the legislator looked at moving that that primary during the last election cycle, but decided against it to kind of keep their position so that they could be, courted during the presidential elections. I'm sure that will come up again. That's an interesting question on why they started on the Thursday. I'm sure there's some historical context that I don't have, but I'll definitely look into that for next time for you.
All right. We appreciate it. Now, we want to jump right to the governor's race. Because that's the one that's getting all the press up there. For our listeners who are not from Tennessee, could you run down the main gubernatorial candidates and tell us how that race is shaping up right now?
Sure, great. What we have is we have a hotly contested Republican primary with the former mayor of Knoxville, Mr. Haslam, We have the former Congressman Zach Womp out of District 3, which is the Chattanooga that goes up to the Oak Ridge area. And we also have Lieutenant Governor Ron Ramsey, who represents a portion of East Tennessee out near the Johnson City area. The race is shaping up. It's pretty contentious down there. They have been going after each other. Mr. Haslam, who happens to have a little personal wealth, which seems to be the way for this year for candidates to get ahead, is being an outsider, kind of with a personal wealth. For some reason, that's playing with voters all over the country, from California to Florida. And Haslam has a slight lead in the polls right now, but it looks like Zach Womp and Governor Ramsey are pretty close and close enough to make a move in the next couple of weeks to see if they have the GOTV portions to move their votes during the early vote period. Tennessee has a pretty pretentious early vote period where about 40% of the votes will be cast probably during that period.
Now, do you have the 50-plus-1 rule, or will the person with the most votes on election day be declared the winner no matter what that vote is?
Yeah, the person with the most votes on the primary will be declared the winner.
So you're probably looking then at somebody with maybe 35% of the vote being the Republican nominee?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm going to look at. Looks like right now the poll has Mr. Haslam up, former Mayor Haslam, I should say, up about 30. He has about 38% of his last poll I saw.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, also on with us tonight, Chris, is Catherine
Smith.
And, Catherine, I'm going to turn it over to you to ask some questions of Mr. Smith.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for being on. We know that Sunday nights are sometimes tough, so we appreciate you taking the time. I just happened to log on to the state of Tennessee's elections, qualifying list today, and there are 20 people running for governor. There are like 14 candidates running as independents. Is that unusual?
It's a pretty high number. We generally do have a good number of candidates that are generally on the ballot every year. I saw on the website that Mr. Basil Marceau, who's a candidate who tends to run quite frequently for a few positions, is on there. And I know there are a few common names that are there every year. So there's about 6 or 7 that generally run for every position that's open that year statewide.
Okay.
So the 20 is not, it's a little bit more than usual, but it definitely is it's not unusual for us to have several folks on the ticket.
Okay. Now, I am really impressed that there's only one Democrat. So how in the world did that happen? Is that party discipline, or is it just that Mr. McWhorter was the best candidate, or how did that come to pass? Because we never have that in Georgia. We always have, a clown car, as we say.
Well, we started out with we thought the Democratic side would be very interesting. It started out with several longtime state senators. I know Senator Jim Kyle had thrown his name in the hat. There was rumors that former Congressman Harold Ford Jr. would throw his name in the hat. There was rumors that former Congressman Lincoln Davis would throw his name in the hat. And I think I give it to the party for kind of narrowing down and figuring that, with the wave that's going in Tennessee, turning Republican, that we needed to have one consensus candidate. And I think that's kind of more, you can definitely tie that to the party. It's also worth noting that, Mr. McWhorter, Mike McWhorter, is the son of former Governor McWhorter, who probably had some good ties within the Democratic infrastructure to make that happen.
Well, I mean, it seems like it's probably – I mean, I don't pay a lot of attention to Tennessee politics, but I know that in general that's good because it gives him, this whole primary season to get his message out and get the Democratic message out, even though he's probably, overshadowed by everything that's going on in the Republican and Independent, but at least he's not babbling against other Democrats. So
yeah.
I admire that party discipline. trust me, I really admire it because we need some of it here.
Yeah, really. I think that's a great point to make, and I think it's a good consensus for the way the Democrats are trying to work to work together, I should say, in the state of Tennessee. They feel that we're on the verge right now. We've lost the Senate. We lost actually the House by one seat. So this is going to be a very important year for Democrats statewide in Tennessee as we gather. They try to gather to make sure that they can protect their House so they can protect redistricting. They've been losing.
Yeah, the redistricting is going to be really important in 2011 and 2012. So we're all hoping that we have a strong Democratic leadership in all our southern states, but especially in our southern states. But
yeah.
Now I just want to change up a little bit because not to be outbeat by the governor's race in the third congressional district in Tennessee, there's actually 21 people running, and four of them are Democrats. So,
yeah.
What's the story in the third congressional district?
You know, the third congressional district is one of those tricky districts. It was it was originally a Democratic seat, actually held by former Congressman Marilyn Lloyd, who when we lost that to Zach Womp. In the early 2000s, it's been assumed it's a Democratic or Republican seat. Although Governor Bredesen went on 95 of those counties, and Harold Ford Jr. did very well in the district. I don't think he won it, but I know he won cities of Chattanooga and did fairly well for a Democrat up in Bradley County, which is not typically a Democratic area. So I think this is kind of the Democrats are trying to reinvent themselves statewide in Tennessee. I think we've kind of held this long-term approach where we've had these incumbents that have been in there for years, and once they retired, we didn't have a replacement for them. So I think what you're seeing in Tennessee is kind of the recreation of kind of the new breed of Democrats, and I think we're trying to identify ourselves on some level.
Okay, and then I have one more question, and I'll turn it back over to Tim. Okay, so you mentioned Basil Marceau earlier, and I noticed that on this list of qualified candidates, Mr. Marceau is running for governor, and he's also listed as running in the 3rd Congressional District. Can you do that in Tennessee?
Yes.
You can?
Yes,
oh, you can't
can.
Do that in Georgia.
You can qualify on the – I think he's running as an – is he running as an independent in the governor's race?
No, he's running as a Republican in both.
Republican, okay, as both. Yeah, it's he can put his name on the ballot and get qualified, obviously.
Okay, and Tim, one more thing. You know how we had Miss Angela?
Uh-huh.
Well, they have Lady J.
Lady J.
Running for as a Republican in the 3rd Congressional District in Tennessee. So, and it looks like it's official. It's in her, official qualifying language, so... but back to you, Tim.
Okay. Speaking of Chattanooga, I live in that area, not just a few minutes away, US 27, here in the northwest corner of Georgia. And, of course, I get all the Chattanooga television stations. And just from watching the commercials on them and stuff like that, it would seem to an outsider that all the energy, media coverage, and everything has been focused on the Republican side of things. Is that the way it has been in Tennessee, or is that because we only have one Democratic candidate running for governor, or am I imagining that?
Tim, I think I would say that it has to do with probably the amount of money raised. I know if you look at some of the how much they've raised in that race, it's going to be a hard fought Republican primary on that side. And Robin Smith raised somewhere about $633,000, and the gentleman she's going against is from Chattanooga, attorney Chuck Fleischman's raised about $850,000. And I think if you look at the Democratic side, there's some good candidates there. particularly in Dr. Brent Staton, who happens also to be the nephew of Minkin Davis, is a good candidate on the Democratic side. But, you know, they've been outraised by dramatically amount of money, and so people are pretty much primarily focused on the Republicans because they're the ones that can get the message out right now.
And in that governor's race, why is Mayor Haslam doing so well, do you think?
Well, you know, I think, Tim, I think it's just a matter of where we're at economically. Folks are kind of tired of, you know, I think they're tired of the same type of politicians and looking for folks with business backgrounds to be able to help solve the issue in the economy. I think Mayor Haslam has done a good job of getting on TV, getting out early and getting his message out. And I think that's kind of what's pushed him over the side, or pushed him over the top in that the Republican primary. As opposed to the other two candidates, which have not as much resources to be able to get their message out. I think Mike McWhorter will eventually, once the primary is over and the focus is on those two, will be able to, you know, equally compete and do well and get his message out. And I think the governor's race should shape out to be, you know, a little more closely than people will think.
So your crystal ball then is telling you that the polls are pretty much accurate and that Mayor Haslam will be the Republican nominee?
That's what my, you know, I've called, you know, to my folks out there in the field and on the ground are giving me that, you know, Haslam will be the nominee. You know, there's an interesting catch, you know, that we haven't talked about the congressional races, but that could play into it. There's an interesting rumor out there that in the 9th district in Memphis, which is you know, one of the most populated cities, that they'll some of the Republicans will switch over to vote with the local politics for Steve Cohen in the primary on the Democratic side in order to keep out Willie Harrington. So that will be interesting to see if that happens. I don't believe that many Republicans will do that with the governor's primary, but that is, you know, one of the rumors that is out there.
Okay, now my next question, as a matter of fact, is about those congressional races. It looks, from looking at some of the national stuff that scores these races, that there are probably at least two Democratic-held seats that may switch. Is that what you're seeing there?
Yeah, we're definitely, it's, you know, there's two, with the retirement of Congressman Tanner and Congressman Bart Gordon, and it's kind of placed Democrats in a tough position. You know, the District 6 race, there's two pretty well-known Republicans that have raised a lot of money out there. On the Democratic side, there's it's actually an interesting, going to be an interesting Democratic primary. There's going to be, they're both two Marines that are running against each other. And so that, you know, whoever comes out on that, I'm sure will be able to get the support of the party to be able to put forth a meaningful campaign. But I'm not sure it's going to be enough to keep that seat in Bart Gordon's district. John Tanner's district, on the other hand, is where Senator Roy Herron is running. I think that'll be very competitive. Roy Herron is a state senator from out that way. He's very popular. He's a minister and very closely tied to the faith-based community out there. But that area also did not go for Harold Ford Jr., so it'll be interesting to see if the tide is turning out in West Tennessee, where it's been mostly Democratic for years.
Okay. Now, in these congressional and a lot of local races around the country, these Tea Parties have been a major presence. Has the Tea Party been a presence in this election in Tennessee this year?
You know, it's interesting. I think that the Tea Party in Tennessee has done a good job at shaping the message and the issues. You know, I think unlike a lot of the other areas where wedge issues this year seem to be kind of off the table for jobs in the economy, in Tennessee, you know, we've been talking about the Arizona law. I think in this legislature, several Republicans, you know, we approved a proclamation, and they actually flew it down there themselves to hand deliver it. So I think the Tea Party activists have actually had a major effect on creating what the message and shaping what the issues are going to be in this campaign cycle. And I think if you're looking out in John Tanner's district, District 8, Congressman Tanner's district, where Steve and Fincher and Kirkland are out there battling, that's definitely a sign that the Tea Party has put their own candidate out there in their backing against the Republican establishment. So I think I would say yes, the Tea Party has definitely had some major effect in the state of Tennessee, not so much statewide, but they have definitely shaped some issues and message, and they are showing that they can, you know, compete in Republican primaries in particular districts.
Okay, now pull your crystal ball out for me one more time. Again, to the casual outsider who, like me, who might be watching what's going on in Tennessee, it looks like it might be shaping up to be, I don't want to say a banner year for the GOP, but a pretty good year. Is that the way it pretty much looks realistically right now?
Yeah, realistically, it's sad to say, being working for the Democrats that I've worked for in Tennessee, it looks like it's going to be a tough year for us. I think we will, we'll hold on. I think we'll lose one of those congressional seats and hold on to another. I think the House Democrats will, in the coordinated campaign and the Senate campaign, will do a great job at keeping their seats. So I think that the Tennessee legislature should shift back to Democratic, or at least keep it at the same point where it's at, which it will be neutral. But perceptionally, I think the Republicans will definitely have an edge in Tennessee.
Okay, and one final question that I have for you. What should Democrats look for on primary night that will tell how things might go in November, or is there something they can look for?
Well, I think the key to watching how far right Tennessee is moving is definitely the governor's Republican primary. I mean, I think if there's, like I said, I think Zach Wamp and Ron Ramsey are not close in the polls, but they're definitely within, a good reach of a good GOTV program. So I think if we're looking at Tennessee, I would watch the governor's race, because Haslam is kind of an independent-minded businessman with some social issues, where he's leaning kind of more moderately, I should say, a moderate Republican. And so if the state turns and chooses a more right-wing, hardcore conservative, I think that will be the race to watch. So I think it's definitely keep your eye on the governor's race to see where we'll be going with that.
All right, Mr. Smith. We certainly appreciate you being with us tonight on the Kudzu Vine, and we hope that as the fall election cycle progresses, you'll come back and talk to us some more about the great state of Tennessee.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you for having me, Tim, and Catherine, thank you for your question.
And good luck your campaigns in Florida and South Carolina.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Well, that was very interesting, and hopefully we will have in a moment, if something hasn't happened, Mr. Basil Marceau to call in. While we're waiting for that, Catherine, there was a bunch of stuff we were not able to get to in the Georgia portion of our discussion earlier. And the first thing I want to get to is, Steve mentioned it right before he went off. We do have a Democratic statewide runoff between Buckner and Sinkfield. Now, some pundits have described this as the sleepiest race on the ballot. It's kind of been running under the radar, but what's your feel for this race?
I think it's going to all be about turnout. I think it's going to have a lot to do with the fact that there are some down-ballot races that have runoffs as well. Some of the state House and state Senate races have runoffs. So I think a lot of it's going to have to do with who gets their voters out for that, and then hopefully they'll, pull a vote for one or the other of the Secretary of State's races. But I think, it could be, very small numbers that make that choice for us.
Yeah, you live, as we've alluded to many times on this show, right in the middle of the 5th Congressional District in the most populous county in Georgia. 43% of the residents of this state live within 50 miles of where you're sitting right now. And so it would seem that your area could swing any election. Of these two candidates, which would you say would be more popular or well-known in your area?
I think that I would say that Gail Buckner is more well-known in Atlanta, just because she's been in the state legislature, in the state senate for a long time, you know, back and forth. She ran mm-hmm. for Secretary of State before, so people know her name. However, I think that the African American population knows Georgiana Sinkfield. She has been the longest serving woman in the state legislature until she decided to run for this office. So, I mean, I think she's well known too, and very well liked. So, I think it's really going to be. I mean, I think that turnout in the African American communities is going to make a big difference
mm-hmm.
for both of them. I mean, I think that if Georgiana Sinkfield is able to get a lot of African American and more progressive voters, because I think she is of the two a little bit more progressive in terms of her approach to, for instance, the voting machines, and only marginally different, but a little bit different. So I think that it's really going to be about how people get their voters out. And again, I think it is really going to. I think that where there are other runoffs is going to have an impact.
Now you mentioned Sinkfield a great deal when we were talking about this particular race before the primary. So you're not particularly surprised to see her in this runoff, are you?
I am not surprised to see her in the runoff at all. I know a lot of people were expecting Mike Mills or Miss Angela, but I talked to a lot of people who, you know, more old school Democrats who have known her for a long time. Some of the people who I know who serve in the legislature and the Senate, some of the people who I know who have been in Democratic politics for a long time, especially African Americans, who have known Georgiana and value her leadership over the years, even though she's been kind of quiet, apparently she has been very influential.
Mm-hmm.
So, it wasn't a surprise to me. In fact, I think I predicted it.
Yes, you did, as a matter of
but
fact. Where did she get this? But you got the last laugh there.
Well, but I predicted it would be Mike Mills and Georgiana Sinkfield. So I was wrong. I was half wrong, but I was half right.
So we have one candidate who was the nominee before who has name recognition, another candidate who seems to be popular in the progressive community. Are we looking at a race that's too close to call right now?
I would say yes. But, you know, I've been wrong about these things a lot.
Mm. You seem lately to be right about them a lot more than I am. So I'm certainly going to defer to you on that. And, Mr. Marceau, if you're listening, please call.
Yes,
so
we
back,
would love to talk to you. We have lots of
we
questions.
We would definitely love to talk to him. But
well, he might just be awfully popular right about now. You know, he's been.
That's true. This gentleman, when he was invited, was just I don't know what, a coffee table discussion type of guy, and suddenly he has gone national on us, so we would very much love for him to call in, but you know, this is live radio, anything can happen and does happen, and if for some reason, regrettably, he can't call, that would not be the first time that that's happened, and we would try to reschedule. Now, back to the Georgia thing. We are looking also down south. We've talked about this race some. Earlier this year, Austin Scott, state representative, dropped out of the governor's race. It was rumored that Johnny Isaacson picked up the phone and talked him into doing this. That we do not know. But he's running against Representative Marshall. down at Macon. And I'm one of those people that happens to think that Austin Scott can win this race, especially in this toxic environment. What do you think, Catherine? He's run close races before, Representative Marshall, I mean. It's not the safest district that he's in. It's pretty conservative, and he's pretty conservative,
yeah,
come to think of it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But,
he's pretty conservative.
What's your take on that race?
Well, I actually didn't look at the numbers I'm sure that he got that Austin Scott probably got a ton more votes because there were so many Republicans that voted in the primary. But, you know, I think Jim Marshall is pretty well liked down there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that he, those of us who are further to the left than him, who don't live in his district, get frustrated by him because he doesn't always vote the way we would like him to.
That's true.
In fact, does he ever vote the way? Anyway.
Sometimes, but not a lot.
I do think he is well liked, obviously. I mean, he keeps getting elected. And
mm-hmm.
The only thing I think the kicker is going to be, as always, is, you know, how, like you said, how toxic is the environment? How many Republicans can Austin Scott get out to vote against a sitting congressman with seniority in certain areas, and who has been, you know, well liked in his district?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's they keep saying it's a year of anti-incumbency. I'm not big on polls. I think that they, especially, you know, any time before a week before the election, are kind of meaningless, and they're too inside baseball for all of us. For anyone beyond those of us who are inside baseball, but I think that's really going to be the kicker. You know, if he has enough money to run commercials and be really nasty against Jim Marshall, which I don't know how he could be, because they probably vote the same.
Mm-hmm. The one reason I keep bringing up this race, which I've done several times, is I've got a feeling that this is the one congressional race that's actually going to be a contest on election night in November, because really I don't think any of the other congressmen, those that have opposition, I don't think there's a problem there anymore. Do you?
No, I don't think. I mean, I don't think Hank Johnson's got a problem. I don't think, of course, John Lewis doesn't have a problem.
And Bishop, I don't think he has a problem. So
no, I think you're right. I think John Barrow's probably safe.
A lot of these people have token opposition, but now, honestly, Austin Scott is something quite different, and that's the reason I think we ought to watch this thing. We only have about 6 minutes left in the show, and I wanted to visit one more subject because something very interesting is going to happen in your area tomorrow. A certain president is going to be coming down. The president is coming to address the Disabled Veterans of America convention, and afterwards he's going to do a fundraiser for the Democratic National Committee. Mayor Reed will be introducing him at that.
Sorry, I can't
function.
Afford it, so I'm not going. But
don't I know the pain of that? But there has been a lot of talk in the press, not about who's going to be at this thing, but who's not going to be at it. And there's a list of them, starting with former Governor Barnes and several others. What do you make of that, Catherine? I'm just going to ask it. Are certain politicians avoiding the president tomorrow?
Well, according to what I read about Roy Barnes, Governor Barnes had already made plans to be in South Georgia,
right,
on a campaign, you know, whatever roundup. And
mm-hmm.
you know, honestly, I have to say I kind of admire that he didn't change those plans.
Uh-huh.
I think it's I mean, if he hadn't had plans and he just sort of made it up, I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to his schedule, so I don't know. But if he really did already make those plans and have, you know, an event planned in South Georgia where he was going to meet voters, and then, you know, I think that's important. He is running for governor, and I think it's important for him to, I mean, I admire him for actually reaching out and talking to voters more than he has in the past, so I think that's good. Here's my question about this fundraiser that President Obama is doing tomorrow in Georgia. You know, we all saw this in 2004 and in 2008 to a lesser extent, where these guys came in and, you know, they flew into Atlanta, they did a little, you know, some kind of public thing, and then they went to a fundraiser, and then they swiftly exited the state with a couple million dollars that never came back to Georgia.
Uh-huh.
You know, and, you know, I'm glad that he's coming to Atlanta to address that convention. I think that's very important. But we need financial help in Georgia. And I hope that some of that, you know, how much ever money he's raising, because those ticket prices are very high, $10,000 to get in the photo line. $10,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, just for the photo op. It's $30,000 for the co-host dinner or reception or whatever.
Wow.
The lowest ticket price is $1,000.
Wow. I can't afford the lowest one.
I know. Who can in these times, you know? But, you know, if he is, you know, I mean, he's doing it. It's already scheduled. But I hope that some of that money comes back to Georgia for our party organizing and for our elections in November, because we are a struggling party in
yep.
Georgia, and we need help.
Amen.
And I'm trying not to be negative, but I saw what happened before. I mean, you know, John Kerry and John Edwards would fly in here, and they'd be here for like 2 hours, and they'd leave the state with a couple million dollars. And I just think, you know, I know it's nice that we have some wealthy Democrats who can make those kind of contributions, but
mm-hmm.
I think it's only fair that some of it, either the DNC says, you know, we appreciate that you gave us this money, but we really think you should also contribute some money to your state.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
well, you know, you make a good point, because this is a midterm election year. It's not like the president would be raising money for a campaign for himself on a national scale. And as you mentioned, Georgia is kind of toward the end when it comes to having the kind of money that state parties need. And apparently the Democratic National Committee is already awash in money. So why wouldn't some of that money stay here, right?
I mean, let's hope some of it does. But you know what they'll say? Is they'll say, well, there's no point in us spending money in Georgia. It's a red state.
Well, I got news for them. We could win the governorship this year. I mean, it's doable. I mean, Georgia just got moved to the toss-up status.
Well, that does
and if we win the governorship, well, won't a lot of these people who vote for Roy Barnes also be voting for Democrats in down ballot races? Right? I know that if Governor Barnes does not win, that we have no chance in the down ballot races.
That's true.
So you know, I hope the Democratic National Committee looks at this, and that's going to be the final word I'm going to be able to give for the night, because the old clock on the wall tells me that we have run through another hour on the kudzu vine. Mr. Marceau, if you're listening, we're sorry you could not be with us tonight. We hope you will be able to reschedule and be with us at a later date. We appreciate Steve Anthony and Chris Smith from Tennessee for being on with us tonight. It's been a great show, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
And I guess we'll see you next week on the kudzu vine. Good night.
Okay. Good night.